on Jehovah Shalom. Jehovah Shalom. And what we are looking at here is peace. Peace. God is our peace. Judges chapter 6 and verse 19. Judges chapter 6, verse 19. We are looking at Gideon here, and as he is preparing to do what God has asked him to do, he is filled with doubt. So God provides this test, or acquiesces to this test to get his mind straight. Verse 19, and Gideon went in and made ready a kid and unleavened cakes of the ephah of flour. The flesh he put in a basket and put the broth in a pot and brought it out unto him under the oak and presented it. And the angel of God said unto him, take the flesh and the unleavened cakes and lay them upon this rock and pour out the broth. And he did so. Then the angel of the Lord put forth the end of the staff that was in his hand and touched the flesh and the unleavened cakes. And there rose up fire out of the rock and consumed the flesh and the unleavened cakes. Then the angel of the Lord departed out of his sight. When we put our faith in God, it does not come back unanswered. Now, I do not mean that it comes back answered exactly the way that we want it answered. It doesn't go that way. Well, you know, if God was good, he'd give me everything I want. We don't understand fully the consequences of the things we want. Sometimes the things that we want and the things that we desperately pray for are things that are not good for us, even though in our hearts and mind, they are exactly what we need. Right? We say, well, Lord, what I need you to do is I need you to take away this pain. And many of us have prayed that prayer. No doubt many of you prayed that prayer this morning. Lord, take this pain away. And the Lord puts you in the refining fire and he hasn't taken you out yet. And we have to understand that God's will is deep. God's will is vast. It is complicated. But what we cannot expect is to allow ourselves to disparage God or think that God has forgotten about us. He answers. Just in the way where all things will work out for the best. And that is what we must hope in. That is what we must rely in. But while we're doing that, while we have proper expectations, we can never go to God and ask him for anything and not expect that he's going to do it. It's that old adage of praying for rain but not grabbing your umbrella on the way out the door. We've had a very rough year and a half for our family. Now, I don't want to be careful with rough. Many people have had it much worse. But for us, it was filled with obstacles. Illness and the things with Danielle's surgeries and things like that. And you pray, Lord, please don't let that happen. And then it happens. You know, Lord, I pray that when the doctor says this, that comes out all right. And when we talk to the mechanic and when we talk to the expert, and when we talk to this, Lord, I would hope they say this. And then they come back and that's not what it is. And then you end up in a better situation than you were before because you had to go through the situation you didn't want to go through. I don't want it to be this way. And you go through that way and you go, it was hard and it was tough. And you come out the other end and you go, oh, well, that makes sense. We consider things going on with my dad. Please continue to pray for my dad. He goes in October 26th to do his scan. They finished up the chemo Tuesday. He's going to be done with his radiation. And the doctor was talking to him on Friday and said, hey, listen, you know, you've been doing great. You've driven yourself to every appointment. You've come to every chemo thing by yourself. You're continuing to eat. And he goes, most of my patients, they don't do that. And he's sitting there goes, you must be incredibly healthy. And I'm sitting there, you're forgetting my dad can be incredibly stubborn. Maybe every now and then if you look at me and you see, why does he keep at it? And why does he keep doing certain stuff like, because I'm my father's child. If I know something's supposed to go a certain way, that's what I'll do. And I'm not perfect at it, but I ask you to pray for him. His stubbornness has made him to every appointment so far, and we're praying that when he gets to that final check, they're going to be able to green light him for the surgery, and he'll be just fine, and they'll be able to take care of that. But when we get to the end of that, well, Lord, why? I don't know why. But I'm glad for a report from a doctor saying of everything you've gone through, you still got your head up. I love hearing that about my dad. Not just because I need to know my dad's tough, but it's good for him. I'm glad that he is healthy at the end of all this stuff. At least to the best he can. Now, he's in pain. He's uncomfortable. Brother Bill, you know. You know exactly what he's going through right now. Just ask that you pray for him. Well, you know, when we first started this thing off, that doctor said something completely different. He said, hey, listen, the type of cancer you have is incredibly aggressive. You've ignored it for about the last year, which means you probably had it for much longer. You've smoked since you were like 2. It's not great. We were scared. But you know what you do? Lord, please, help him get to the end of this. And I don't know where we are. We'll find out at the end of October 26 exactly what all this has done and what the Lord's done, and we'll see. But you know what I can do? I can pray and expect God's going to do something about it. Now, if he chooses not to, that's his will being better than mine. I don't understand, but hey, I know that he'll work things out better. So listen, as we're sitting there, I expect God will do something. As I pray for this, I expect an answer for that. You know, hey, Lord, let it be small. Let it be. And I actually expect that that's what will happen because that's the faith we have in him. We have faith that he will answer the prayer. Sometimes the answer is wait. Sometimes the answer is now. Sometimes the answer is no. But either way, we must have faith in God. He has the power to do it. There may come a time in my life where I'm praying for God to take away the constant pain from my back, my knees, my whatever. There may be a time where I ask God relief from a very serious illness, and the only relief he gives me is to take me home. Folks, that'd be the best relief you can give me. You take a Tylenol, and I get migraines. Sister Ruth, I know you get worse, but you get these migraines. What do? I take medication, I'll have a cup of coffee, I'll go lay down. You know what will happen a few months later, maybe a few weeks later? I'll get another one. Right? You catch a cold this season, you're going to catch a cold next season. Right? I remember back when we were doing the best we can not to catch COVID. Man, I did everything they told me to do. You know what I did? I caught COVID anyway. This is going to happen. You take me home, I never have to worry about it again. You know, Brother Charlie comes up here. Hey, make sure you vote. We ought to vote. Now, some people, they don't want to vote because they're nervous. They don't like the candidates. Hey, I understand. You know what's going to happen 4 years from now? We're going to do it again. Lord Terry's is coming. We're going to do it again. You go up to heaven, we never have to worry about such petty things as politics, disaster relief. We never have to worry about those things up in heaven. So you go ahead and you give me the ultimate healing. In the end, God's will is best. But what happens to us is we have a lack of faith sometimes, and that lack of faith steals from us our peace. Maybe perhaps you sit there and you pray, I know God could, but I don't think he will. And that goes back to that Bible verse. What of you, if your son asks for bread, you give him a stone? We wouldn't do that. Yesterday, you know, we're driving home. We're kind of trying to hurry up and hustle on through, and we got to get home and out of the back of the van. What do I hear? I'm thirsty. All right, we're almost there. Just hang tight, guys. I'm thirsty. Okay, I know we're thirsty. We're all thirsty. We'll get up. We'll get back to the place, and everybody have something to drink. It'll be good. I have to go to the bathroom. Pull off to the side. And what do? All right, you get a drink. Here's some water. Everybody get some water. Everybody happy? Good. Why? Because they're thirsty. And while I'm already stopped, I might as well give them what they... Isn't that what we do? If your children need something, you stop. Unlike my dad, who found creative ways to not have to stop. Oh no, we stop in our family. All right, here you go. And let's make sure everybody... That's what we do. Why wouldn't God take care of you? You may disagree with what he's doing to take care of you, but why would you think he's not going to take care of you? When it comes down to solving problems, you know, Xander's getting to that age where I can kind of talk through some stuff with him. Well, what do you think? But ultimately, I'm doing that so I can teach him how to problem solve. I'm not actually looking to him to come up with solutions for things. I'm trying to teach him how to problem solve. All right, here we go. We got this going on. What do you think we ought to do? Well, what about this, Dad? That's a good idea, but we need to do this instead. In his mind, he's got all the answers. Why? Because he's hit that age, that preteen age where he's got all the answers. And what's Dad's job? To sit there and show him the better answers. And that's what God does for us. And sometimes we get angry at God because we have to do things we don't want to do. Sometimes we get angry at God because what God says will happen, we must trust him. If we believe that God will heal and take care of his people, and you're one of his people, you got to believe he's taking care of you. Whether you agree with his solution or not, you have to admit it's taken care of you. All right? Even to sit there and count the things that are much better than what they could have been, we count them as joy. Some people say, if I can't think of a solution, God can't do anything about it either. That's not my God. Well, I never would have thought of that. Aren't you glad God's in control and not you? Well, I didn't even think that was... When I saw us headed over there, I was panicked. I didn't understand. I really didn't like it. And then all of a sudden, we got there and we got something that we never would have gotten if we didn't go there. And I didn't even fathom that. That's who God is. He thinks about the things you don't think about. He can come up with the solutions you can't come up with. That's who he is. That's why we got to have peace when we're going through things. That's why just because you don't understand doesn't mean it doesn't make any sense. Road trips with the kids, it gives you much introspection on the relationship between us and God. Are we there yet? No. Growing up, we weren't allowed to ask that question. My kids, they asked that question. Are we there yet? No. Melody got me with a good one. Are we there yet? No. Why? Well, because Dad's driving a minivan and not a jet. Sorry. I sit there, I'm thinking for a while. I go, that's exactly who we are. Lord, can I have this now? Why? Lord, can I have... I don't want that. I want this. Well, no, you can't have that. You got to have this. Why? If you don't know why, it doesn't mean you're still not going where you need to go. Does that make sense? Just because you can't fathom the why doesn't mean God's not moving. Doesn't mean he's not doing things. Just because you don't see it doesn't mean it's not happening. Our point number two here, we see a restored peace. And that's what the Lord brought to Gideon in our reading, a restored peace. Letter A there in your notes, God will give instruction. Proverbs chapter 8 verse 32 says, "Now therefore hearken unto me, O ye children, for blessed are they that keep my ways. Hear instruction and be wise, and refuse it not. Blessed is the man that heareth me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the posts of my doors." Like that devotion we just heard, the old paths. We find God's way of doing things, and there is peace. Well, that's just, what about what I want? Listen, we got to understand that sometimes the things we want are just dumb. Sometimes the things we want are destructive to us. Have we not seen people out there who argue against people like me? What do you mean this kind of music is sinful? What do you mean it's bad? Well, go ahead and turn on the news. Preachers have been preaching against the pop and the hip-hop music for as long as it's been around. And what did the world just relearn in the last few months? Oh, these guys are dogs. These guys are wretched individuals. This baloney they're singing about, it's not just an idea. It's not just for shock value. They're actually doing it. And you know how long it was since the last time? It was just a couple years. We were reminded of it again. We keep being reminded about the debauched practices and what everybody's upset now. You know who's not upset to find out that these people over in Hollywood and these people in the music industry are corrupt, abominable people? Me, because I always knew. I'm at peace with it. They said that they released a list of all the people that went to those parties. And people are sitting there going, all right, well, do I got to throw all these CDs away? I don't got to throw anything away. I didn't have them. Oh, all the money I wasted. I didn't waste a dime. Why? I'm at peace. get these big, big old pastors out there doing the same, just debauched lives in the backgrounds. And something will come out about them, and everybody goes, oh, no. And I said, no, I already knew. If your doctrine's that far off, no doubt your life's that far off, too. You got to be working for somebody to be that far off. You got that Carl Lentz guy out there, not the guy from Flat Rock, but the big mega pastor out there. Sitting there, they did an interview with him, and he's talking about, oh, how debauched and how decrepit all these big-time pastors are. And you know what? He'd know. He'd know. I don't have to worry about those guys. I've got peace. Why? Because, as Brother Charlie brought out this morning, I seek the old paths. I ain't perfect. I ain't the only saint in this town. But I'll tell you this. You find God's way of doing stuff, you've got peace. Well, what if so-and-so gets into the office? I keep doing what I'm doing and I have peace. Well, what if the doctor says this? I keep doing what I'm supposed to do and I have peace. Well, what if your family, this happens in your family? I keep doing what I'm doing and I have peace. Now, I want to remind you, peace is its own thing. Peace isn't just the opposite of chaos. You can have peace in the midst of chaos. You can have control and a sense of calm that sits alongside of pain, grief, and confusion. I don't know what to do with this mess, but I'm not rattled inside to the point where I've lost my faith. I know that whatever this mess is, God will see me through it. And there's a peace that comes alongside, and that's why they say that it passes all understanding, because it shouldn't be there. If I'm in the midst of the worst part of my life, and I've got pain, and I've got anger, and I've got confusion, but alongside of it is a certain peace, and the peace takes away the anger, and the peace siphons off the fear, and I understand that I'm looking at something uncomfortable and terrible, but there's still peace. It doesn't make any sense that it would be there. So we have that if we follow the instructions of God. And following the instructions of God keeps you from being in a position where you lose your peace. You lose your peace. You know, I follow after God, and if I obey God, I don't get in trouble. If I obey God, my resources stay the way they should. If I obey God, I'm not cheating nobody, I'm not robbing anybody, so my relationship stays good. But it is when I sin that I create chaos, yes? Chaos in my house, chaos in my church, chaos at work, chaos in my personal life. When I go off the things that God has told me to do, I invite chaos into my life. I invite chaos. You ought not invite chaos. I'd sooner leave the front door of my house open. I'd sooner leave the doors propped open at the church than to allow chaos into my life. We need to follow what God has to say. Proverbs 4:13 says, take fast hold of instruction. Let her not go. Keep her, for she is thy life. You know what I've learned about a lot of people who are young? You know what? A lot of anxiety comes from sin. And a lot of anxiety comes from not knowing what to do or when to do it. That becomes a big part of our problem. You want to know why? Because nobody teaches them how to do those things. Nobody expects them to do those things. Instruction is our life. Instruction's our life. You think of some of the jobs that you guys have had. You guys have had very specialized jobs. If somebody just walked in on day one to your job, how was it? No knowledge whatsoever. You know, if I showed up at any one of your jobs without no prior knowledge, I would make a mess of what I'm doing. You would want to sit there and you would teach me, right? You wouldn't let me drive the fire truck day one. I don't get to be the chief scalpel in charge on my first day of surgery. You know what I mean? You stop and you educate and you teach. Well, in life, it's the same thing. We are supposed to be teaching godly principles to young people. Don't cheat. Don't steal. Honor God. Treat all people fairly. Honest balances and scales, that sort of thing. We go through all of that. And we teach them. And we hold on to that instruction as we receive it, and we obey it because it is our life. God tells me not to be in areas or not to be around people who commit crime, to move away from people who are quick to mischief. So you know what? I'm not going to find myself downtown Detroit on that one corner there that the cops don't even go to. Sorry, Flint. I keep forgetting I moved. Flint. I don't go down there. Well, it's a high crime area. Well, I'm not going to go to a high crime area at night. How about that? Why? Because there's high crime doing people in that area. Well, that's, don't you call that a racist thing, a classist thing? Don't you dare. Is this where the stuff goes down? Yes. Then I won't be there. My thing is the same for joining in politics. Is this where the crimes are committed? Well, you know, a little bit here just for the greater good. Then I don't want to have anything to do with you. I'm not going to sit there and run for it. You know, I could not imagine running for president or running for senate or anything like that just to dive both feet into a cesspool. Now, we need Christians in there. We need people to do it. It scares me a little bit. You know what I mean? Wherever there are crimes committed, where other people are committing crimes, white collar, blue collar, I don't care what kind of collar. You ought not be where crimes are committed. We say that. We teach that. But yeah, you get people. But the people who are committing the crimes are so nice and they've got terrific motives and they seem wonderful and they're my bestest friends and they like me. And that's the way it goes. We grow up hearing, oh, criminals are bad. Criminals are bad. People who break the laws are terrible people. And then you meet some people who are breaking the laws and you find out some of them got good personalities. Some of them are decent people to sit down and talk to. Some of them are funny. Some of them will even give you the shirt off their back. But you know what they'll also do? They'll also take yours if they're desperate enough. We stay in the peace. We stay away from troubled waters. In that restored peace, we must cling to God's instruction. As we rely and we trust in what God has to say, as we walk in obedience to Him, we must continue. Forgive me, I gotta make sure. When I hit print on this thing, here we go. When we consider what God can do, we must also consider that with Him all things are possible. This is not the first time we see a messenger from God setting fire to something. Remember Elijah as he sat with the prophets of Baal? He gave them all day. All day. And did you see what they did? They hooted, they hollered, they screamed. And Elijah let them hoot, holler, and scream and jump up on their altar and do all their little dance until noon. And you know what he started to do at noon? He started making fun of them. Well, maybe he's asleep. Maybe he's somewhere else. Shout louder. Jump high. Go ahead. Maybe God will wake him up. Oh, and they started cutting on themselves and they started preaching about the wonders of Baal. So they prophesied until the evening. It means they were preaching until the evening. And you know what? Baal never showed up. And that is what I see today in a world with no peace. They're relying on gods that do not show up for them. Anheuser-Busch does not show up to somebody's doctor's appointment when they are diagnosed with cirrhosis of the liver. The Marlboro Company, they will not show up at a person's funeral who died of lung cancer. They won't. They don't even send flowers. The guy that sells you the drugs on the corner, he may or may not remember your name long after you've died. These worldly philosophies that we apply to our lives time in and time again that do not work are like the prophet of Baal. We call to them and they do not answer. I heard the testimony of a person sat 20 years trying to find humanistic ways to solve their problems within their mind, within their family, and nothing the quacks gave them worked. And it's almost like you sit there and you want to go, maybe shout a little louder, Sigmund Freud didn't hear you. We give money to men who guess. We give money to men who tell you what you want to hear. And then we boo-hoo and we cry when it doesn't work, but we snub our nose at God because He tells us stuff we don't want to hear. That's the world for you. Well, have you tried blaming somebody else? Have you tried making it so that maybe you just have an issue and you don't have any other choice but to do this? Yell a little louder. But let us go back to God for our peace. And it says the reason why you are struggling the way you are struggling is because you are a sinner. Well, it just seems like every time I'm around so-and-so, I just yell, hoot, and holler, and this and that, and I need someone to tell me that it's not my fault. No, it's your fault. You need to be forgiving. You need to let it go. You need to chop out that root of bitterness. You need to calm down. There's biblical principles we could follow. And if we do not follow them, it is like waiting. Waiting for Baal to answer. But you know what? How much hooting and hollering did it take for God to answer? None. When Gideon poured out that broth on top of the food, it was sopping wet. You ever set fire to a steak? I mean, you just took the lighter and you set fire to a steak? I've never done that. Or a piece of chicken. You ever just set fire to a piece of chicken? I've never done that either. That sounds difficult. Now, you leave it in the oven long enough, absolutely, go ahead and burn that all day. But they poured out the food and the bread and all that, dumped the broth on top of it, and it caught fire. The ox that they were sacrificing, they built a moat around it, and they put water and water and water and water, and the fire fell down from heaven and lit it on fire. And that's just God showing somebody something. What about the people He's brought back from the dead? What about the people that He's healed? And again, it's not just abracadabra you can walk. There are pathways to the brain that need to be formed and muscles that need to be strengthened. And not only were they given the ability to walk and to move, but their brains were taught. Consider what we see in physical therapy. Somebody has a stroke, somebody has a problem like that. They must be retaught how to walk, retaught how to move things around. Muscles must be rebuilt. When God said walk, they could. And that is a bigger miracle than I think we give it credit for. There was no, I'm going to connect whatever was broken, and now you get to go to physical therapy. The man carried his bed. He carried his bed. Balance and knowledge restored. There's nothing that God cannot do. And we must have faith. And in that faith, we have patience. And from that patience, we see peace. Because it takes practicing patience to develop the peace that we need. And what we will then see is that God in the healing of us, God in the answering of us, will remove all doubt. As we look back at our text, verse 23, and the Lord said unto him, peace be unto thee, fear not, thou shalt not die. Verse 22, I apologize, verse 22, and when Gideon perceived that he was an angel of the Lord, Gideon said, alas, O Lord, for because I have seen an angel of the Lord face to face, and the Lord said unto him, peace be unto thee, fear not, thou shalt not die, because the Lord said peace. Verse 24, then Gideon built an altar there unto the Lord and called it Jehovah Shalom. Unto this day it is yet in Ophrah of the Bezerites. Because the Lord said peace, Gideon said, all right, here's an altar. God is our peace. God is our peace. Whatever battles we're facing, we do not face them alone. Whatever it is we are fighting, we do not fight alone. And we have peace in that. We have peace. We don't have to worry about things. We don't have to fight over this and that. Even down to the simple things. You know, we were loading stuff up and we were trying to coordinate people in there. How are we going to get people? When are they going to show up? Do I need to be here for it? And how do we do this? And I'm like, all right, there's a specific way we can do this that would be the easiest. And the Lentz girls, they showed up. Seats already pulled down, ready to go. And they go, that's fantastic. And the kids started carrying stuff. I got the cutest picture. Brother, did you get that picture? I got the cutest picture. Gideon's on one side of a box. Melody's on the other side of the box. And I think it's Megan Lentz is on the other side, and they're carrying it out slowly. And I laughed because I remember when little Megan Lentz was the size of Melody. And to me, like, I needed a second. And she's out there. They're both the Lentz twins. They're ready to go graduate college. They've got careers. One of them's got two. One of them's working on her second degree right now. And you just, like, you're just right here yesterday. And now you look and you see the things that they're doing for the kids in their church. It's fantastic. We prayed for Megan. Megan was sick when she was first born. They thought they were going to lose her. 20-some-odd years later, there she is, helping my kids serve the Lord. But anyway, we're getting stuff loaded up. Everything's all good and wonderful and well. Here comes Michael and Samantha. Michael, who'd prayed for a wife. Samantha, who just, you know, was having a hard time in life. So she went back to the old church she used to go to when she rode the van route. And she looked over at me and she goes, "I remember you used to sit on the van route." And I said, "Oh, you're little Sammy." Yeah, a few years later, she's marrying Michael Hugan. Now she's my wife's best friend. I remember praying. I used to take the van route list. I used to pray for those kids by name. And there you are. And you're here. Loading this stuff up. And there's your husband with a back seat full of tools and your child. And you guys are, well, the tools were in the back of the truck. I got to say that clearly. I don't want anybody getting mad. Your baby's in the back. You got a carload full of tools. You're going to head down. You're going to go help people. What a wonderful thing. God can do anything. We cannot doubt. And I think I just nailed the head on what a lot of Christians are the most doubtful of, is that God is still calling people, that God is still using people, that God is still working through people. Last night I had a very touching moment where I got to see He's exactly still doing that. Here's a kid that's desperately ill. Lord, please take care of her. Lord, please, please don't let her go. And there she is working with my kids. And if I was still a member of Flat Rock Missionary Baptist Church, she'd probably be one of the people taking care of my kids in a class. Why? Because their older sister, Cassie, who was here, her dad taught me, and for a spell she taught my kids. You want to talk about awesome? That's awesome. So there's nothing that God cannot do. We got one more point there, and I don't want to belabor this, so we'll save it for next week. But there's two different kinds of peace that people can have. There's no peace. In this world out there, they get a momentary peace. They get sedation. And then there's people like us that get that peace that passeth all understanding, and we'll talk about that next week. Lord, thank you so much for your peace. Father, we pray that you help us to tap into it, to be more than just reminded of it, but Lord, to rely on it. Because Lord, it comes from you. And it's because of you that we can have peace, Lord. In knowing that you fight our battles and knowing that you work all things together for good, that the Father, your will includes your love for us. Lord, that you're not just blindly doing things, and if we get hurt, we get hurt, oh well. But Father, you're doing the best we can on this cursed rock that we live on. And Lord, we love you and we appreciate you, and Lord, we praise you for it. Help us, Lord, as we go into the worship hour, Lord, just unlock our hearts that we may sing freely. For it's in the name of Jesus we pray. Amen.